Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Anthony Arnoldi, Director of the Office of Information and Resource Management and Chief Human Capital Officer at the NSF. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Sully Thomas. Anthony, in addition to your role at NSF, I understand that you're also the chairman of the Small Agency Council. Could you tell us more about the council and its charter? Specifically, what kinds of agencies are represented on the council, and what are the goals of the council?
Sure. The Small Agency Council is a voluntary management association of sub-cabinet independent federal agencies. It was established in 1986 with the purpose of achieving three major goals. The first, to ensure that federal policy oversight agencies consider implications to small agencies when developing management policies. The second, to exchange approaches for improving management and productivity at small agencies. And the third, to share management resources so as to strengthen the internal management practices of small agencies. The loose definition of a small agency is an agency with less than 6,000 employees. Currently, the Small Agency Council has over 80 member agencies representing about 50,000 federal employees, and each of those agencies is represented by a principal management official who generally oversees agency management functions such as personnel budget, procurement, finance, and information resources management. The full council meets at least two times a year to discuss a variety of management issues of concern to small agencies. The council also has a number of committees that represent small agencies on specialized issues, including information technology, finance, procurement, training, and administrative services. Personnel from these agencies who work in these functional areas sit on these committees and help to widen the overall scope and effectiveness of the council. In addition, we're also represented on many federal policy oversight organizations, such as the Chief Human Capital Officers Council, the Federal CFO Council, and the Federal CIO Council. Small agencies that have joined the council are responsible for managing a wide array of federal programs and implementing various statutes. Members have diverse program responsibilities, including private and public sector employment, commerce and trade, energy and science, transportation, national defense, finance, and cultural issues. Almost half of the council is divided among regulatory and enforcement agencies, and the remaining half is divided among grant-making, advisory, and uniquely chartered organizations. There are many size agencies represented, including several so-called micro-agencies with less than 100 employees. During my tenure as chair, I believe the council has further advanced the cause and unique issue of small agencies through the power of its collective voice and membership, which is really the main charter of the council. For those who are interested in learning more about the Small Agency Council, please visit www.sac.gov.
Great. Now, as a follow-up, could you tell us more about the efforts on the part of the council to establish a human resources training academy? What is this training academy, and how might it operate?
Actually, it's not the Small Agency Council, but the Small Agency Human Resource Council that has created the Human Resources Training Academy for small agencies. The SARC, as they're called, operates independently from the Small Agency Council. However, because my Deputy Division Director for Human Resource Management is a co-chair of this training committee, I can actually tell you a little bit more about it. Two courses have recently been held, and both were well attended. And at this time, instructors are being sought among the different small agencies to train on a wide variety of topics within the HR arena, such as workforce planning, labor relations, and benefits. I should also mention that the Small Agency Council administers a training program each year through voluntary contributions from member agencies. This program allows us to pool and leverage funding from across the government agencies to make training opportunities available to small agency personnel. This is particularly beneficial to some of the micro agencies and other really small agencies that would otherwise not have the opportunity, in some cases, to provide their personnel with required training.
Now, Anthony, let's come back to your role at the National Science Foundation. In transitioning to the future, how do you envision NSF's human capital needs evolving in the next 2 to 3 years? And how do you envision your office evolving over that same period of time to support this transition?
I think what we'll do is we will continue our aggressive push to hire more staff. We're in desperate need, and we'll continue to focus on that. We plan to continue our efforts to redefine the NSF workforce and equip them with the skills and competencies that they need to be successful and to carry out the agency's mission. We'll continue to look for ways to leverage technology solutions to improve our work processes. And we'll also continue to implement work-life programs that improve both the quality of work and the quality of life for our staff. My office will continue to strategically align itself with our customers, listen intently to their needs, and work closely with them to create and customize our service offerings and deliver the services and solutions that help the agency carry out its mission.
Now, there has been much discussion about the pending retirement wave in government and what type of impact it will have on agencies. What are you seeing within NSF, and what plans are in place to mitigate its effect?
Well, as it turns out, our retirement projections aren't as grim as the federal government overall. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects 50% of all federal employees and 70% of all federal senior managers will be eligible to retire by 2010. At NSF, by contrast, only about 20% are eligible today, and 39% will be eligible in 2011. In addition, and maybe more importantly, NSF staff tend to work longer into their retirement eligibility years. With the recent adoption of the updated NSF strategic plan and the importance of aligning the agency's human capital management with the foundation's strategic goals and priorities, a succession planning working group was tasked to update key elements of the human capital management strategy, including leadership succession planning goals and strategies. Some specific succession planning concepts being implemented include identifying best practices in leadership transition and knowledge transfer, providing hands-on learning and mentoring for potential leaders, and appraising senior leadership on their succession planning efforts. And we believe that focusing on those particular areas will put us in the best position to handle any retirement wave that we might face in the years to come.
Now, Anthony, you previously talked about how NSF has received the honors as one of the agencies as titled as the best places to work. And in fact, you've obviously ranked consistently near the top on that list. So other than some of the things that you've mentioned, what do you think are some of the keys to your success as a best place to work?
Well, I'd like to take a lot of credit for that since it's the Federal Human Capital Survey that yields those results. But the truth is, it's the NSF staff that make NSF a great place to work. It's very participatory, as I've said before. Every individual believes that they have a voice and that what they have to say can influence the agency's priorities and the agency's strategic direction. I think that that is an important factor in people coming to the foundation and wanting to stay at the foundation. In addition, I think that we have a very unique and very important mission in terms of funding basic research. We promote science and innovation through all types of science disciplines, and I think it's critically important. Two items that might not directly be connected to NSF in the public's eyes would be the initial investments we made to lead to the creation of the internet, or the investments that we made in a small group of principal investigators who later went on to found Google. So those are two of the things that, as a employee of NSF, you recognize that the work we do really in the near and the longer term future promote incredible innovations in science, engineering, research, and education that are critically important to the country. As I said earlier, one of the other reasons I think we are considered one of the best places to work is we do all that we can to provide a variety of work-life programs that are meaningful and beneficial to our staff. I mentioned the on-site child care center, the on-site fitness center, the on-site health services, along with retirement counseling and tuition assistance. We continue to try and add to our portfolio of work-life programs to the fullest extent possible.
That's great. So on that same note, Anthony, we have a number of listeners who may be thinking about a career in public service. Now, given your own federal experience and the transition from the private sector, what advice might you give someone out there who's perhaps considering a role in government?
Well, there are a number of agencies with different missions who serve this country in different ways. I would suggest that you explore a bit to find a fit between what you value, what you're interested in, what your strengths are, and what those agencies do. I know that agencies are working hard to be more flexible in terms of work schedules and work assignments, so don't assume there isn't a good fit for you. Finally, understand that there's nothing more important than service to your country, so lend us your talents, and you might find a rewarding, challenging, and personally enriching opportunity awaits you. That was certainly the case for me and continues to be the case for me at NSF.
That's wonderful advice. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time. I do want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule, but more importantly, Solly and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country in your roles at NSF.
Thank you. And I guess I'd like to finish by saying a recent study said that there was a very positive impression of who NSF was, but by that same audience, not a clear understanding of exactly what we do. So what I would encourage you to do is to go to www.nsf.gov and learn more about what the foundation is all about, the areas that we provide funding for, and the types of activities that might be of interest to those of you seeking employment in the federal government.
That's great. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Anthony Arnoldi, Director of the Office of Information and Resource Management and Chief Human Capital Officer at the National Science Foundation. My co-host has been Solly Thomas, Associate Partner in IBM's Human Capital Practice. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who may not be able to hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.